Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout with the instructors from Traditions Training and the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. And, of course, our illustrious leader, Bobby Halden. And we always want to thank Fire Engineering for this opportunity and obviously the Clarion Group for allowing us to do that. So before we get on today's topic, as you know, what we always do on our show on Wednesday, Bobby goes on all of them, but we always want to hear the update for FDIC. So, you know, where are we at? We're getting close. It's getting hot. So
yeah, it's fantastic. So everything's open for registration. Please register early because, you know, they're going to fill up fast. We had so many pre-registrations and rollovers from the previous attempts that a lot of the hot classes are filling fast. So please register early. Please get your hotel rooms early. I can't help you. I don't have any in with the hotel people whatsoever. So please get your hotel stuff in early. It's just what it is, right? All of the stuff, the comedy night is on, the fun run is on, the stair climb is on, the fool's bash is on, the union party night is on. It's going to be fantastic, and you'll be able to do it in shorts and a t-shirt this year. So you want to wear a jacket, it won't be cold, it'll be warm. We'll be there in August, so it'll be wonderful. We're going to have a wonderful time. The one thing I am kind of asking people to think about is if you're going to be doing like the stair climb or the fun run, it's probably not the year to wear your bunker gear. I think this year, maybe we just, you know, just let's just wear our workout clothes and not have anybody, you know, suffer any heat exhaustion or heat stress or anything like that. It's just, that's my ask. I don't want anybody to get hurt, you know, doing, and I get the symbolism. And I love you for it, but you know, maybe get a t-shirt that looks like bunker gear. I don't know. Make yourself feel better. Wear a helmet. I'm okay with that. But, you know, I think that running in gear and doing the climbing gear in August, you know, with high humidity, is just a terrible, terrible idea at so many levels, right? So anyway, so that's that. Please register soon. And I can't wait to see everybody there. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal. I was at a huge car show this weekend. 20, 30,000 people. You know, it was wonderful. Everything was back to normal. There were, ran into 8 or 10 people wearing masks because they had, you know, vulnerabilities and judgment-free zone. So it was cool. But so the world is returning to the way it used to be. We're hanging out and having fun and talking to each other and all that good stuff again. So it's a great chance for the fire service to reengage. We have so much to talk about, man. There's just been so much going on. I can't wait to hear what everybody has to think about the stuff we've done tactically and operationally, you know, irrespective of all the other medical stuff, just on that end of it, you know, Jerry Knapp's work and a couple of other people, just some phenomenal stuff going on out there. Brian Brush's work. They'll all be at FDIC. We'll be talking about metal oxide detectors. We'll be talking about the rescue study. We'll be talking about, you know, how do we incorporate that kind of data and stuff into our strategy and tactics? So really, really cool, really, really cool opportunity to just, you know, really kick it off and in a really cool way. And just really looking forward to, getting everybody in there. So FDIC is rocking and rolling. Register now. And if you want to teach at FDIC April 2022, the call for presentations is open. And the best way to get selected is to write for us. So send an article to Peter, send an article to me, let us know who you are. You know, show us that you understand your topic or have knowledge about your topic. It doesn't have to be War and Peace, doesn't have to be a 10-pager. You know, it could be a simple one or two page article that we can put up online or maybe get in the magazine. But if we don't know who you are, it's hard to select you, right? If the committee's never heard of you, never seen you teach, nobody knows, so that's a problem, right? So the call for presentations is open, 4-hour workshops, 8 and 4 hour hands-on, but just 4-hour workshops, 8 and 4 hour hands-on, and then 1 hour, 45 minute classrooms. So get your stuff in now. Obviously the Instructor Society will help you. If you got a question about how to, you know, put your proposal together, get with Mike, get with one of the guys. You know, they'll help you put it together. It's not hard to do. and they know the ins and outs of it. They help us select. So, you know, it's a wonderful deal. So please call for presentations open. And then the other thing I'm going to pitch real quick is we're doing a really cool thing. I'll be down in Ocala, Florida, live on the 18th, 19th, and 20th. I'll be down there with the Rev Company, and they represent like 5 or 6 different apparatus manufacturers. You got Tower Ladder, you've got Spartan, you've got E1, a bunch of others. And we're going to be doing live walkarounds. You know, Ricky, we're going to be getting inside the engines. I went out to the Spartan factory, watched the chassis go through the whole birth canal process, how a rig gets put together. We're going to be tearing them apart. We got people coming in, the OEM people are coming in. So it's going to be just absolutely amazing. Live for 3 days, the 18th, 19th, and 20th. If you go to firetruckexpo.com, firetruckexpo.com, and look at the Apparatus and Technology Conference, check that out, man. That's going to be really cool. That will be down in Ocala, Florida. So click on that. Join us. We've got a lot of great people going to be coming in with me. We're going to be everything fire apparatus and any question you want to ask. We're going to have real experts with us. It'll be really cool. So that's all I got.
All right. Well, that's always good. It's always good to get a good update. And I just came back from the E1 plant. So they're already cleaning up for your arrival. So they're cleaning floors when I was there. So look, before we get on the topic, I just want part of the discussion and the prelude into what we're going to talk about. I want to make sure everybody knows where everybody's from. So Donnie, why don't you just kind of introduce yourself and the area that you're from? Because I think it kind of plays into what we're going to talk about here a little bit. So,
yeah, sure. Donnie Fletcher, 16-year veteran, Prince George's County Fire and EMS Department, just outside of Washington, D.C., currently assigned as the 5th Battalion Chief. Been there for the last 5 years as 5th Battalion Chief. It's the greater Oxon Hill, Fort Washington area, right outside the National Harbor. Glad to be on.
All right. And Mike?
Mike Richardson. I'm the Division Chief of Training with the St. Matthews Fire Department, which is part of Louisville Metro. I've been here 19 years and 36 years between New York, Kentucky, and Florida. So thanks for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
And Chief Heller.
Hey, everybody. I'm Aaron Heller. I'm Deputy Chief Hamilton, New Jersey, just outside the city of Trenton. Been there for 31 years, just started my 32nd year there, and also served as a volunteer for a long time in Ocean County, New Jersey.
All right. So I just want to make sure that we knew we have people from all different parts of the country when we have the discussion, because, you know, one of Bobby's employees, Bill Carey, has been striking a chord with me the last couple of weeks. So the topic today is we call them in the Washington, Baltimore metro area outside in fires. And this is a fire that starts on the outside of a structure and communicates, you know, to the outside of the structure and then into the structure itself. So while these are not new type fires, they in recent years have become more identified. And we have certainly seen an adjustment on how departments attack these type fires. So we're going to be hearing from each one of, you know, these chiefs here today about what their department does. So today's show will discuss like their tactical priorities used by their departments or their geographic area. And one of the things that I think everybody has to keep in mind is that what we're going to talk about, what I'm going to talk about, what Chief Hall is going to talk about, you know, Chief Fletcher, Chief Heller, and Mike are all going to talk about, these are tactics, strategies, and operational priorities that are based on each department's geographic area, their staffing, the resources that are available to them, how close their fire station locations are, what their turnout times are, and more importantly, each individual department's operational efficiencies. You know, so we can't base, you know, I always try to tell people is to not get stuck in your geographic areas, that you think just because this is the area that you've been in for so long, is this how everybody does it in the fire department? Now, I got to give Bobby Houghton a lot of credit very early on in my FDIC career was, you know, that I wasn't talking about a lot of stuff because I just thought everybody knew it. And, you know, Chief Houghton said, well, you'd be amazed at what firefighters don't know. So, you know, you need to make sure that you get that out there. So, you know, as we started teaching different classes, you know, is making sure that everybody understands, you know, how we do things and why we do things. And it's all based on the things that I talked about. you know, about how your standard operating procedures operate, and then the risk each individual department's willing to take in fighting these type fires, because that's critical. You know, depending on where you're at geographically or across the country, you know, your department may not have the risk assessment for these type fires or have the ability to fight these type fires with the way that Chief Heller fights them or Chief Fletcher fights them. So in the words of Bill Carey, you know, you have to do you, or his hashtag is do you. For us to sit there and tell you for your area of the country that you have to do it the way Donnie and Fletcher and I would do it, you know, that's just not right. You know, we'll certainly give you some pointers of how we fight them. And if you have similarities or you're able to adapt them to your department, that's great. But to say that this is the only way to fight an outside in fire is, you know, I think it's reckless and danger to firefighters. I mean, we're all not New York. We're all can't be, you know, these big departments, but we certainly can take those pieces of information and apply them to our fires if all those other points, you know, meld together. So that's why I wanted to make sure everybody got introduced to understand we weren't talking about one simple geographic area. We're talking about different parts of the country and how they fight those fires. So when we talk about these fires, you know, I would say, you know, I'll speak for me and Donnie first, and obviously Donnie's going to get to speak, is that we always fought these fires the same way we fought a room in contents, or we fought two rooms of fire, or three rooms of fire. We always thought that, you know, if there was a fire on that floor, you know, we had to dedicate resources to it. And we didn't take into account that the fire really started on the outside, which is where the base of the fire is at. And then it extended into these areas, and exactly how many resources we were going to have to deploy to do all our tactical priorities, you know, getting water on the fire, getting our searches done, and how many floors were actually involved in fire. And that's not including a basement and an attic. So Donnie, I'll kind of let you go. I think I've laid enough foundation and made sure for everybody to understand that, you know, we're not, you know, this is just the way that you fight them with, you know, your tactical priorities and your resources. And then of course, Mike and Chief Heller will certainly get their chances to bite in on it. So.
Yeah, absolutely, Rick. Thank you. So, and just to be clear, you know, we work in a unique area where we do have that urban setting in some parts. And then I can go down south and run a rural setting as well. And similar to what you said, you know, our staffing and area is going to be dependent on necessarily where I put the first line or where I know that second due engine's coming from. And we'll go over some of those in just a bit. But outside in fires, right? So it's just a key word during your brief incident report that should key you into a topic. So similarly, if you go on a scene of a Cape Cod, you know, the chief or the first due engine goes on the scene of a Cape Cod, that's going to trigger everybody else responding down the road, you know, E-walls. You know, if I say one in the front, two in the rear, that's going to trigger me to say, hey, there is a basement here. It's present. It's not going to be a slab. By saying the fire is outside in, to me, means that it's going to be a two-line fire. No one line is going to extinguish the full part of this fire. You're going to need one line to put the fire out, which is primarily going to be on the exterior of the home by flanking that fire and flowing into the soffit. And then you need a line inside to prevent extension. One line is going to hold it and the other is going to put it out essentially, but you can't do both with just one line in these type of fires. So when we talk about outside in fires that start on the back deck of a home, a cigarette up against the foundation that runs the siding into the soffit, and ultimately any fire that primarily enters the home through the soffit and does not start on the interior of the home. So when we talk about that, right? So, you know, if we have a fire on the second floor of a home, and, you know, one thing we always have to do is obviously we're going to get in the attic, we're going to check for extension and so forth. And if the fire does breach through that drywall, right, we have 30-minute rated drywall, hopefully, or something. Once it does breach in the attic space, you know, we're going to have some extension in there. These fires are immediately extending into the attic space. And you know, I say that we're seeing a lot of it recently, and I'll tell you where we're seeing it is in newer construction style homes. And I think a lot of it has to do with the vinyl soffits versus the old plywood soffit and easy access of going right in there. Just where I work, two of our last larger injuries have been due to outside in fires, and it's been due to roof truss collapse of, you know, the fire breaching of that space. We're trying to get a line on it. We're trying to get above it, and the trusses are failing sooner than what we can get it in place. Did I describe it okay, Rick? Or
yeah, and I think, you know, of course, if you look at the fire that Mike was showing us, you know, pre, you know, the when we started, you know, of course, he's going to need more than two lines to control that, and I'm sure, you know, Chief Heller in his area, geographic area. But before we get to Mike and Aaron, I mean, obviously, Bobby, you were saying something that was pretty interesting that I didn't, you know, I guess I hadn't thought of, was the historical outside in fire that, you know, outside in may be the key word, and I hate using keywords, but obviously outside in fires have been around a long time, and you were naming a bunch of those, and I think it's important to mention those.
Yeah, I think, you know, in just recent memory, some of the most significant fires in the American Fire Service have been outside in fires. Pressure State Tabernacle, fascinating fire. Obviously, one of the things anytime we have a religious building, right, they're built with void spaces intentionally. And so the Pressure State Tabernacle fire, which killed three firefighters, very, 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 very important fire. And what happened there was the crews had a fire, they had smoke showing. They went in, it had started in a shed exterior, articulated with the church building, with the backside of the church building. But as they were unaware of that, although a fire marshal had done a walkthrough, they still, you know, what people know and don't know during a fire is fascinating, right? Because when we look back in time, we think everybody knew everything at the same time. They didn't, right? But they pulled multiple lines through. They got to the back to the, what's called the sacristy area, back where the pastor or the priest or whatever would be doing their thing. Then they opened some ceiling, and the combustible gases dropped down on them, and a subsequent collapse. Firefighters became trapped, disoriented, and three firefighters lost their lives. So that scenario has played out in nuanced and kind of various different ways across the country. From that, we learned that if you're going to pull ceiling, especially on any kind of structure where you got concealed void spaces, where do you pull it? At the door, right? But oftentimes, you know, fires are like a bad person. You know, here, kitty, 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 kitty. They're real nice, and then they kick the cat, right? So oftentimes we're the kitty, right? Here, kitty, kitty, kitty. So the fire is drawing us in. Looks like we're live on Facebook now. Hi, everybody on Facebook. I'm Bobby Halton. I'm here with my friends on our Hump Day Hangout, Chief Riley, Chief Richardson, Chief Fletcher, Chief Heller, and we are talking about outside in fires. So we're just talking about Precious Faith Tabernacle. We're talking about Donnie just gave us a great, great overview of how they take care of it down in Prince George County, which is Maryland area, which is, you guys have pretty consistent tactics, which is cool. Really well developed system there. I like it. So anyway, you've got that fire. You've got Southwest Supermarket where Brett Tarver lost his life. You've got SOFA Superstore in Charleston, outside in fire. And the list goes on and on, Walgreens, on and on and on, where fires articulate up. And Chief Richardson and I were talking earlier, we were kind of laughing about it, for construction materials, the soffits are where they put the best lumber they can find. No, it's the scrap, it's the leftovers, right? We've all had time on crews building houses, and the soffit wood on buildings is generally pretty rough stuff or pretty limited stuff, or it's vinyl. And then in many instances, like my home, it's perforated, right? We've put vents in it because we've got mold issues. So you've got a natural air draw, right? So you've got a flow path. And then, so if the fire starts, say my trash can caught fire on my home on the exterior, articulated up into that soffit, there's a natural draw there. There's a natural draft there. So that fire is going to take off. So think of it, you know, think of it in those terms. And so historically, these fires are just everywhere. Joe Berry from FDNY has been a student of these outside in fires for a long time, and just wonderful, wonderful research on how do we manage these fires. And a lot of folks say, oh, you know, when you're doing your 360, you know, you'll be able to pick that off right away. Well, sometimes irrespective of how the fire started, you got to deal with the fire you got when you get there, right? And so I think for me, one of the things I want to talk about this group was is that that phenomena to where the fire gets up over our heads in a concealed void space, right? And it's ripping pretty good. It's hard to judge because there's not a lot of windows in those void spaces. And sometimes the gables will have some, you'll have some smoke coming out there, but there can be a ton of energy. And then it's such an interesting phenomenon when the ceiling fails, like Southwest Supermarket or a superstore, suddenly visibility goes from great to zero. And that's a tough spot to find yourself in. And firefighters have found themselves in it, but will tell you that and tell you how disorienting it becomes rather quickly. So tough topic.
All right, Chief Richardson. I mean, because I think, Donnie, I would say a lot of our outside in fires have been in, we go to these that are in sprinklered, because we had a sprinkler ordinance since, almost the 90s. So, a lot of our outside in fires are just up the sides, a very minimal amount of extension inside the living space, and then in the attic. So where I would think Chief Richardson and Chief Feller obviously have a different perspective when you have three floors of that, and having to deal with that. So Chief Richardson, we'll go with you, then Chief Feller, we'll let you chime in there. So.
Sure, thanks, appreciate it. Couple points I would throw out or to consider is, when we get on scene, we're doing an aggressive size up to try to figure out, we could have an, as you mentioned, an actual exterior fire. So we have the siding that's involved, we have roofing materials that are involved, but it's definitely a fire that's on the outside of the structure. We have a fire that's extended into void spaces. That could be knee walls, that could be the attic, that could be between floors, any of those locations. And then we could have fire in the occupied or the living space. And we're trying to get a handle on that as quick as possible, because that's going to tell us, as Donnie pointed out, how many lines are we going to need to go after these different areas? Because as you said, we can't put fire out in multiple locations with a single hose line effectively. So we're going to have to make sure, if we've got fire in three locations potentially, do we have the resources to deploy to those three locations? And then if not, prioritizing where we are going to have to go after it. That would lead me to the old RECO VS. Obviously, rescue. If we potentially still have victims, we have to get a line in that structure as fast as possible to make sure that we're securing that as best we can to get our primary searches done. And then our next thing, if rescue has been completed and we have an all clear, then we have to be thinking about our exposures. The one that we looked at just before we convened here, we had two houses that were 5 to 6 feet apart. And while it started with one, before we even got on scene, it had already extended to two. And as you know, two can become four very quickly. So we have to make sure that we're getting those lines in place. And then C, confine. Can we confine this to a certain area of the structure and cut it off before it's able to extend and travel to others? And that can be especially important in apartment buildings, townhouses, where we have very common contiguous void spaces. And we have to identify if it's getting in there and if we can get it cut off. And then the final thing I would throw out is, once again, knowing your building construction, because that will really dictate potentially how these fires can travel and extend. The one that we just had was vinyl siding over OSB. So it spread very, very quickly. But we have other areas where we're going to have vinyl over drywall. So that's going to buy us a little bit more time. But once again, is it a new structure with a vented soffit, or is it an old structure that has an actual wood structural element to try to slow the fire down? And another one to be aware of, we've run into recently, is buildings that have drive-it or stucco on the exterior. We see fires that are getting behind that and running in the void space between the stucco or the drive-it in that void space that exists. And we've seen that at fast food restaurants like McDonald's. We've seen it at some commercial buildings. So that's another one to be aware of. As Donnie pointed out, it starts maybe in the mulch on the side of the building, and you don't really realize it, but it's actually, there's a void there that it's been able to get into. So those are some things we're thinking about and looking for.
Sorry about that. Some pretty good points there, Chief Richardson. We greatly appreciate it. And now we're going to hear about this neighborhood outside, in New Jersey or wherever that place is at.
Yeah, it's
not any wood structures around there, so I don't know what you're going to talk about.
Just a couple. So it's interesting because where I work, it's a very large town, basically. It's a 40-square-mile town, but it's got everything from McMansions to really, really rough row housing and everything in between and a lot of commercial. In the last week, we've been to two jobs. One, we actually went across the river over to Pennsylvania, and it was a ranch fire 2 days ago. There was an auto-exposed fire from a vehicle in the driveway. And same thing, it got that vinyl siding going, got right up into the attic. Understaffed company over there, so they had to strike the next alarm, and response times were fairly slow for that. Hence, a pretty good attic fire before anybody ever got there. So that's the prime example of everything that Chief Fletcher was talking about. And the need to get in, what we found is the need to get in quickly and know your manpower. Your tactics have to be based on your manpower, obviously. So and your water supply. So if you're running the way we are, and we've got pretty good manpower numbers, not great. We don't have New York numbers, but we got pretty good. We can dump about 30 guys into the scene in the first 5 to 7 minutes. So that's a lot better than a lot of rural places can do. But it's got to come with an aggressive line from the interior, along with a line to the exterior, because we can knock down all we want on the interior. If we keep having problems from the exterior coming in, it's going to be an issue for us. But what I've found in a lot of these fires has been the lack of opening up. If we don't have aggressive work on the inside, getting the voids opened up, getting the ceilings pulled, it's kind of a losing battle. And I know that's what the battalion chief who went over there yesterday or day before yesterday told me he had to explain to a couple company officers the importance of getting in and getting to those void spaces with lines very quickly. The other thing that I've seen in our area, especially out in these more well-to-do neighborhoods, have been deck fires. Everybody's got their chimeneas and their burns in their backyard and all that, and they don't realize how fast that can transmit into the next problem. I commanded a fire about 2 weeks ago or so in a multi-million dollar fire loss. When we got there, it was gone, absolutely gone. 30 mile an hour winds. Fire appears to have started on the deck, auto exposed to the back of the house, lightweight wood frame, all vinyl siding. And you know, maybe the PSA on this is, hey, don't spend $100,000 on your landscaping when you could spend 70 or 80 on putting some interior, residential sprinklers in. But, that was probably the answer to that one, but it's something that we found. And as Chief Richardson said, the stucco in the fast food joints and the grocery stores or whatever it is that they're using on the exterior of these buildings, some are fiberglass panels and so forth. I've been to a few of those fires over the years where it ran that void. And the same thing to me, it's having that line in place quickly on the exterior, a line in place quickly on the interior. And again, rescue conditions and so forth determine which is going where first. But protecting the interior crew, protecting any interior potential victims still inside, and a quick truck operation and getting things opened up, because once we start opening it up, we're going to find it. You know, that's the issue. But I've found too many of them, either too many companies that are either focused on just the outside fire, you know, the car fire that started it or the deck fire, and they didn't get the line inside quick enough because the moth to the flame was drawn directly to that exterior fire. Or in conjunction with that, they didn't get opened up in time with a line in there to really, really make a difference. But we're seeing that exact same trend here. Like I said, the last 2 weeks, I commanded one and my battalion commanded another, and exactly what we're talking about. So it's perfectly pertinent topic right now.
You know, I think you raised a couple of really interesting points too. If I could just jump in real quick, Chief Riley, the outside in fires, when you add wind driven to it, Aaron, then you're really up against a tough ball game. And then add to that combustible exteriors, right? Like, we all looked, when we talk about the cladding, we all think about the fires in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, where they had the American Hotel and that exterior clad, or we think about in the UK, Grenfell Tower, right? That combustible exterior, albeit put on with the best of intentions for insulation purposes, but then it's flammable, and then it articulates, you know, with other components of the building, like windows and such, or patios. And then I think, if I'm not wrong, Aaron, I think that the fire at the American Hotel in Abu Dhabi was a grill, was somebody grilling, because it was a holiday, it was New Year's. And I think someone was grilling, and that's how that fire started in one of the most expensive hotel settings in the world, right? So, you know, it's not just the problem, you know, residential, local in New Jersey, it's a worldwide problem and a fascinating problem too in the process. But when you talk about, you know, grilling, it's the Thanksgiving turkey where the guy or gal thinks, oh, I'm going to do one of them, you know, drop the turkey in the oil thing. And they do it on their wooden porch on the back of their 3-story walk up. Never a good idea. You know, it's like a scene right out of that. Who are those fellows? Johnny Knoxville and his buddies, the Jackass fellows, where Mike Hudson's hanging. Mike Hudson's actually out filming with those guys on a boat right now somewhere, which is a Jersey guy, a friend of ours, great guy from Ocean Sea, it's Ocean Breeze, Ocean's, everything's the ocean in Jersey. It's either the ocean or an industrial plant. So it's just teasing. It's a beautiful state. I love New Jersey. But so those outside in fires, and it's fascinating because we've been talking about two lines, right? I think every fire, and it's just me speaking and it's just my opinion, but you guys pay me to have one. So I think every fire is a two-line fire. I've never seen a fire that's a one-line fire. Now, some folks think they can get away with one line. You can play that hand only so often. That's a bluff. You know, you can bluff only so often, and then you're going to get caught. So for me, every fire is a two-line fire minimum. You may have 2 points of attack. You may have 2 points but I think every line that matters should have a backup line. Like your primary line should always be backed up, because if that's the one going to the seat of the fire, that should not be the. So if it's a two-line fire, to me, it's three lines, because the primary line has to have a backup. That's one line to me. It's two lines, but it's one point of attack, in my opinion. If another line's going to go out on search or something, that's a third line. You know what I mean? That for me. And there's a lot of discussion going on right now about tank water fires. Most of the time we can get away with tank water. You know, that's okay. You can get away with a lot of stuff for a while, but you can't get away with it forever, right? And there's a real problem with that, because you create memory, right? You create some procedural memory where you start thinking that this is going to work. That's a problem, because it'll work. Just because it works most of the time doesn't mean it's going to work all of the time, because oftentimes we lay into a plug, we pull 2, 3, 4 lines and it still doesn't work. Sometimes the fire is just, you know, bigger than we can manage when we get there, you know, and that's okay. You know, you contain it to, you know, like they do in California, the zip code of origin. You know, you just try to keep it in that neighborhood. Well, we've had that. Aaron mentioned it. There was I know that some of you are at home on your computers. If you're on Seabright Fire Rescue. Thank you, Pete. I know some of you are home on your computers on Facebook right now. There was a community just 2 or 3 years ago. It was an outside in fire with somebody burning leaves, and it took out like 8 or 10 homes, if anybody can remember where that was. But it was fascinating. And I think, Donnie, I think it was your neck of the woods. I want to say it was a northeastern neighborhood, but not, you know, not Boston, but not, you know, not, you know, not lower Virginia, not what, you know, I mean, it was that area, and wind driven and combustible exteriors got like 6, 8 homes. And the folks did a great job. It was just Mother Nature. She'll pick her time, she'll pick her place, and she'll kick your ass. So, you know, and they're tough fires. They're really tough fires. Gosh, I wish I could remember. You know, I apologize. I'm old, so I can always pull the old guy card whenever I can't remember anything. Oh, it's because I'm old. No, I'm stupid. I'm old and I'm stupid. So, boy, I wish I could remember where that was. But it was 6 or 8 homes, wind driven. Started with a neighbor, with albeit the best of intentions, just burning some leaves, I think. You know, a simple thing like that, and just got out of control. So I think when we're talking about outside in fires in particular, I'd be very hesitant to ever attack an outside in fire off a tank water. I mean, I think that's one of those cases where you got to at least wrap the plug and get somebody to make, you know, say, or call for tankers and a drop tank early, because those fires, they just tend to accelerate rapidly.
Agreed. 1,000% agreed. And it kind of goes back to, I want to go back to something Chief Heller said, and I don't think that he meant to glaze over it, because that's his area and that's how his department operates. Is it, you know, I think one of the things that we take for granted a lot is how well does your department actually operate? I mean, what pace do you operate at? Along with Chief Richardson, you know, I've been very fortunate to go to different parts of the country and operate in roles and watch, you know, I'm just in shock of just how, you know, this department operates at this speed and this department operates at this speed and how that speed can make a fire go out and it can make it grow exponentially larger. So, I mean, I think that's part of the thing, you know, with Bill Carey about do you is that, you know, these decisions that we make on the fire grounds have to be based on your operational efficiency and how well you operate. And you look at any YouTube videos or anything that, you know, we post on fire engineering, through social media is that, for us, you know, for like me and Chief Fletcher, and I'm sure Chief Heller and Chief Richardson, you know, that these departments are operating in slow motion. So, you know, all the stuff that we talk about with science and everything, if we can't, you know, like Bobby was just talking about, get a sustained water supply quickly and efficiently, get fire trucks in the right spot, whether it be a truck or an engine, quickly deploy an attack line. And as Chief Heller alluded to, is that, you know, how good are your truck people? You know, do they know where to open up? You know, do they know when not to open up? And you know, these are things that all have to be, you know, that's why you should go to FDIC. You know, I'm not plugging it, but because, you know, you've got to learn what other people do and how they operate. You know, it may turn your whole fire department around. You know, I think Donnie and I, you know, we think our fire department's great, but it seems like every other tour that him and I work together, we find something we need to improve. And, you know, and if you're not willing to do that with your fire department, man, you're in a bad way. So, but I want to go back down to Donnie real quick before I come back to you, Bobby and Chief Richardson and Chief Heller, is that, so we talk about standard operating procedures a lot, and, you know, and I live and die by those, and I love standard operating procedures. But so Donnie had a fire here recently, that should have been a very normal standard operating procedure fire. For us, an outside in fire requires a line to go to the outside part of the structure and start knocking that down. Just like Chief Heller said, you know, we got to address this outside portion of it. Well, we decided we need to address it pretty early into the incident. But of course, with our standard operating procedures, we think, you know, within our four and a half to 7 minutes, we're going to get this, you know, this onslaught of resources. And at this particular fire, he did not have that. So, once again, decisions had to be made. So, you know, Donnie, man, you know, go from where we're at in our normal day to 4.5 to 5 minute on scene, the whole balance is there to what you were dealing with and how it pertains to an outside in fire and the decisions you have to make.
Yeah, absolutely. The, you know, ultimately it comes down to command and control from a command officer's perspective. Fortunately on this fire, I was, just with units in the area being on different calls, I was the first arriving and was able to have that immediate impact on command and controls. You know, a lot of times when we get there, we already have units forward deployed by the time we realize, hey, it is an outside in fire. You know, you're going to have fire operating above you and so forth. So on this particular fire, it was a lightweight constructed house with heavy fire to the rear. It was an obvious outside in fire that started on a PVC deck. So we're talking about, you know, class B material burning hot, going right into a vinyl soffit, going in, into a lightweight constructed, component house. So the first, and we are right, Prince George's County is, at least I think it is known as an aggressive interior firefighting department. And, you know, one of those things similar to Ricky said, you know, we would kind of go running into these outside end fires in years past and beat our heads against the wall, taking that first line inside, going upstairs, and then trying to stand on a dresser and shove a line through a a 1 foot hole in the ceiling and then wonder why the trusses are coming down on us. We're hurting guys. And so forth. You know, we're not getting the fire put out until it kind of burns itself out on the outside. And then we finally get a truck company in there and open the ceiling up. We just kind of take a butt whooping during the whole process of it. So being open-minded, we all sat down in a room a couple of years ago and kind of identified one of our shortcomings, which were these outside end fires. And what it's going to have to involve is committing the first, if not second, engine solely to the outside of the house to put the siding in a soffit line out. And it can still be done in an aggressive manner, right? We're not talking about flowing lines through windows or anything like that. But essentially, if the outside of the house is what's on fire, I don't care how aggressive you are from the inside, you can't reach it from there until, you know, and historically, again, we would sit there and knock the fire that we could see. And it would take somebody sticking their leg and half their body out of a window with a hose line and flowing up against the siding of the house to put that out. So it's going to take that first due engine solely committing them to the outside of the house. And you know, similar to this fire, it's not the most sought after assignment. I kind of refer to it as like the lineman of the football team. You're not going to get it. You know, the running back's going to go and get all the credit and score the touchdowns and get all thank you. But the lineman is who created that gap and that opportunity for them to score the touchdown. This is the outside team, and these outside end fires are going to put out 95% of the fires, while the, you know, the second or additional engine companies are going to come in. They're going to burn their helmets up. They're going to go inside and play and so forth. But majority of the fire is going to be put on from the outside. You know, just another top, you know, another thing I'm thinking about is, you know, one thing that we can't do. Well, and to back up some, I want to make sure everybody realizes it's when we talk about outside end fires, we're not just talking about the mulch and the, you know, the grill or the mulch, the cigarette and the mulch and so forth that's burning up the siding, right? So we can see them a lot where I work with garage fires, these large two-story lightweight constructed houses that have a single-story offset garage, and you have a good garage fire and it just auto extends up into the soffit. And by all means, you know, the garages here are built to code with metal frame doors where there really is no way for that fire to breach into the living space of the home. So you walk into the front door of these homes and it's crystal clear first and second floor. And you have an absolute ripping fire going in the attic above you in lightweight constructed homes. And Chief Fulton, not to back up, but one significant fire similar to what I'm talking about that we missed that was an outside end fire was the Kyle Wilson fire out of Prince William County, the line of duty death. Another outside end fire on a lightly constructed home. Right. So the fire's breaching into this area that you can't control ventilation. There is no way we can control ventilation throughout an attic. The attic is made to ventilate itself to keep it cool in the summer and hot in the winter. So it's going to take one line going around the outside, flowing on the siding, flowing into the soffit to put the majority of the fire out. And it's still very important. We got to get that hose line inside. And, you know, then you start balancing where are we going to put the truck. On the particular fire that Ricky had mentioned, we had a report of people trapped. The first engine, typically the first engine and the first due truck work together on this particular fire. We decided to put the first due engine on the outside. The first due truck rides simultaneously. Ideally, we'd like to have an engine company operating with them to protect them. The order was given for them just to check behind the front door, make sure there wasn't a double key deadbolt or anything holding that occupant up from getting outside. They checked behind the front door. Reported a negative search just behind the front door, and within moments, another engine was coming, and they made the push all the way upstairs and started getting the fire in the attic space and putting it off. One thing, again, from a command and control perspective there, you know, again, a lot of the times these first and second floors are going to be clear, Ricky. You know, once we do get in and we do have that one line to the outside, I've always found it's good that if your staffing allows it, if you do have units on the scene, to kind of split that attic space up into two different divisions. right? So have an engine and a truck working in the Alpha and Bravo quadrant, have an engine and a truck working in the Charlie Delta quadrant. They know where they're, I know where they are accountability wise. They know where they're responsible for, and they can kind of just focus on those two areas and work on getting that fire knocked. Did I miss anything?
No, Donnie, that was fantastic. And I think one of the things to remember too, when you're talking about dividing up attic spaces on some of these newer homes, we're seeing these multiple pitches. And yep. When you get up there, you can have parts of the attic that are just inaccessible from where, say, where the man door comes in or the pull down door, or, you know,
100%.
So you can get these attic fires today, lightning strike or exterior in, however you want to get there. But attic fire is a whole nother conversation, I think, that we need to be having, particularly when we're talking about the modern residential problem, which is that these multiple pitches, you see them everywhere. It's the new vogue mm-hmm. attic space. And we were all raised with, you know, the attic was like basically one gigantic, you know, place where you could see. It was like an old bunk room, right? It was just not anymore. You know, it's fantastic. So that was a great wrap up. And the other thing too, to remember, I don't think we've mentioned this enough too, boy, we're trying to cram so much stuff in our, you know, 1 hour, the dumpsters. You know, when you get a dumpster fire, the location of that dumpster, that's a big deal. So, you know, even when you're doing your walk arounds, your inspections, you go into some building, even if you're going on a call for another issue, if you see a dumpster up against, you know, a commercial building where it could articulate, you may want to just point out to that owner, hey, it might be worth it to you to move that thing, you know, over another corner of the lot. Yeah, you got to walk a little further to dump the trash or dump the, you know, whatever they're using it for. But it can mean a world of difference if someday, you know, something gets put in there that's flammable.
All right. Well, I know Donnie, you covered a lot. So Chief Heller, we'll go to you for some comments on that. I don't have anything to lead you in on, but I think Donnie gave you enough to talk about. So
he did. That's okay. And so did Chief Halton. So since the dumpsters are fresh in my mind, that is a big thing that we've gone to plenty of those in the industrial buildings, commercial buildings, strip malls are notorious for it, that our fire code does require that they be a certain distance away from structures. But if the inspector misses it, the dumpster guy just drops it where he wants to. And the next thing you know, it's off to the races in a void space of a commercial. And now it's a much bigger deal than even in the void spaces of a residential. And I've been to a few vehicle fires and same thing that caught the, really caught the overhangs in strip malls. And now it wants to run that common cock loft in the strip mall. And we've got that same problem and same thing. They're made out of vinyl. The newer ones are vinyl and OSB or whatever it may be. And it, you know, once it's, it gets in that 10,000 square foot space, so to speak, is where we're talking our firewalls being, it's going to run in between it. And this is a serious problem. So there again, the aggressive truck work of hooking and getting things opened up. And I think from a commander's standpoint, you know, I took a class years and years ago at Illinois Fire Service Institute, and Ray Hoff said, you just bag a fire. You know, where's it been? Where's it at? Where's it going? And I've been using that little acronym my whole career. So I think it's really important that the incident commander bag that really quickly. You know, where is this thing starting out, where's it at, and where do we think it's going to go when it comes to this, so we can get what limited resources we have in the right place to try and defend those spaces and to protect those that may still be inside. So that's from the commercial aspect of it that we're seeing it. But this is, it's pretty common. What I've found is the lack of resources in a lot of places becomes a problem because you've only got so much that you can commit to such a growing fire. So if you miss it in the beginning and you put your resources in the wrong place, bad line placement, truck isn't opening up where it should be, limited water supply, and we're wasting water in a place that it's not really doing us any good. These are the recipe for creating an event out of an incident, so to speak. And that's what I saw at this fire that I ended up in charge of. A couple of weeks ago, it was a mutual aid fire. No chiefs were around. I was coming from 15 to 18 miles out. And the first couple lines were in place when I got there. They weren't where I would have put them had I been there commanding the fire. And not that I think that the loss was going to change, but I think it wouldn't have been quite the same. you know, in the end, I think it becomes a flat slab that and $1 million fire loss. But knowing our resources, knowing our water supply and getting them and understanding the building construction, obviously, right? Everything went back to that. If we know that it's lightweight wood frame, we know that we've got basically vinyl siding, which is today's almost today's version of, you know, asphalt shingle gasoline siding. And we know that we've got penetrations that are going to go in. These are all things that we got to address as incident commanders and company officers first do in. You've got to understand that stuff right off the bat. And yes, Bob, we have got a lot of gasoline siding still.
Heller, you're giving away your location and your age.
I know. The Trenton Hamilton area, we have plenty of it. And what our young guys sometimes start to learn is they'll hook the wall a little bit from the exterior and pull off some really crappy vinyl siding. And here is asphalt.
Asphalt right underneath it, right?
They've never seen it. We didn't show them that one in Fire Academy. So that's where getting out and knowing your district is a big deal too. So that's, I think that adds a little bit to the conversation.
Hey, Chief Riley, I got a question for you and the other fire ground commanders that are on here with me. You know, a lot of what we're talking about and you love SOPs, which is important. I mean, you got to have a plan, and then you got to have your people have to have the ability to make decisions, because context drives decisions, not SOPs. The SOPs are guidelines, but those guidelines, you know, a good fire ground commander, as Aaron just said, you deal with what you got when you get there, right? And the troops that you bring, right? You don't fight a fire with the fire department you wish you had. You fight the fire with the fire department you have. So, and we talked earlier, just a quick note for everybody, Tempo by Jason Bresler does a great job on Fireground Tempo. So if you want a really good class, Leadership Under Fire, Jason Bresler, doesn't get any better than Jason Bresler. He does a great thing on the tempo. And tempo, as Chief Riley said, is going to be different from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, you know, department to department, county to county, and that's okay. That's okay, because the tempo that you work at is the tempo that you work at, right? And you can improve it, it'll change. So to my question for you all, a lot of what we're talking about here violates some like basic no opposing hose lines, you know, don't fight a fire from the outside and the inside at the same time. But on these outside in fires, to Donnie's point, that's exactly what you have to do, in many, many occasions. And so I'd like any of you to talk about, you know, when you're managing a job, Chief Fletcher, and you've got that tactic being deployed, you want that tactic deployed. How do you manage the communications then? What are you looking for? What are you trying to hear? What do you expect your folks to communicate to one another in one of those settings? And then Chief Heller, if you'd take the same question from the commercial standpoint, I'd just like to hear from two seasoned commanders, you know, how you're doing that today. Because that back in our day, that was like a bozo no-no. You couldn't do it.
So I think it's all about having that conversation prior to the call. And I know it sounds kind of cliche of get out there and walk your first do, but it is, you know, when we run these, we did it last night, Ricky, on a high rise fire that we run, right? We have a strict high rise SOP about, and it's just something that's been revamped and we've added extra trucks to it. It's the way the building is, you know, the high rise SOP is kind of looking at it as a box. The first, you know, two trucks go to the front, the other two go to the rear kind of thing. And you kind of surround the building. Well, in this particular building, the access to the rear, once two units get in place, is going to be blocked out, right? So our first two trucks are going to have to go to the rear because we're not going to have any other shot at getting in there. So it was something simple. We ran a food on the stove call and something that everybody would have been like, hey, hold one and one and everybody drive off. And we just called a quick meeting. That, hey, you know, we haven't really discussed this particular building since we implemented these new procedures. Right off the get-go here, I want the first two trucks against our SOPs to do this. But it's, you know, it's the SOPs are the guideline for us that if nobody speaks up, but by all means, if we speak up and we have those conversations and we write building SOPs versus departmental SOGs, that's where we kind of have that play in it. You know, one thing with communication wise with these outside in fires, and like you said, just being very forward with it, you know, it's something that needs to be done, but you're, you know, 8 years ago, you'd have had that guy saying, hey, you're flowing from the outside. You're hitting it hard from the yard. We can't be doing that, right? So just a simple change in terminology, because we're not, you know, so like one term that we use locally is we call it flanking the fire, right? We're not saying, hey, I want you to go flowing through a window. Say, hey, flank the rear. Flank the rear means put yourself at a 45 against that building, and you're just going to flow against the building. You're not necessarily going to flow in any windows. Because we're going to be having crews operating simultaneously, so we don't want you flowing in on top of them. But you know, a conversation that I've had with my crews and we've had as a department is the term flank. Flanking doesn't mean flowing in through a window from the outside. Flanking means flowing water on the siding and into the soffit. And again, it's something that we're not going to. If I just pull up on a scene of guys that I haven't had that conversation with and say, "Hey, flank the rear," they're probably going to look, you know, trying to do some militaristic move of the rear to try and cover it. But, you know, we've had those tough conversations and drawn them out and walked those properties and said, hey, yep, blanket in the rear means I'm just going to flow water on the rear siding. I hope that kind of answered it for you.
That was good.
Chief Heller.
Sorry about that. I think from the commercial aspect, it's very much the same. I think that the key is, again, I don't know if I like this term or not, but it really is resource management. Putting them in the right spot at the right time is going to be the key, especially in those places who are fairly resource poor, who don't have the ability to throw 30 or 40 people at it, you know, 5 to 8 companies at it in the first 5 to 10 minutes. So making that decision as to where we're at, what's going to be able to be our best tactic to stop this thing from at least hold it where it is. And then let's get our extinguishment, you know, hold it where it is, get everybody evacuated out of the building, whether it's a grocery store or a strip mall or something of that nature. And it does go back to knowing the building construction of it. Like I said, with the large overhangs, the large void spaces, I think in commercial end of it, we're a little better off in a lot of places because we're talking about more either in our area, a lot of ordinary construction or some non-combustible and so forth, and not quite as much lightweight wood frame in the commercial aspect of it. But, either way, so that gives us a little time to operate, but again, recognizing that it's an outside in fire, number one, by the first do is really key. And I think messaging that out to everybody incoming is really important. As a chief coming in, if the first new engine says I've got an exterior fire extending in, I've immediately got a whole lot more to understand. So I think that good communication, which again, every NIOSH report comes down to communication. I think that's going to be a big point for us to understand where this thing's coming from and where it's going.
So while we were talking, it's so neat with all you folks out there on MeWe and Facebook that are paying attention to this or participating. I've been getting pictures. This is a Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. I don't know how well you all can see that, but it was a fence that caught fire, wind driven, several homes caught fire. Barbecue, so now someone just sent me a barbecue grill deck fire from Iowa. Some folks are sending me pictures of. So thank you everybody out there who's sending me these shots. This is just so it's resonating with so many people. A great, great topic. I know Ricky couldn't have come up with it. It had to be. I'm just kidding.
Jesus Christ.
I'm teasing you. I love you. So I tease you. We don't mess with you. We don't like you, Ricky. You know that better than anybody.
So I get it.
Ricky, this is just a great topic. And thank you everybody for sending. Oh, look at this. Okay, grilling. There it is. A deck fire from grilling. I mean, that, you know, there you go, right? So amazing stuff. Now, what does your shirt say there, Donnie? That's victory. Your shirt says, stand up so we can see it. Let's see it. What? You're muted. We can't hear you. You're muted, Donnie.
He was trying to show you his hair more than he was trying to show you the shirt.
What's that? It's a gym t-shirt. It just says Victory Gym.
Oh, Victory Gym. Well, good for you. We have a church here called Victory, which is a really cool
church. There you
go. Yeah, they're a really cool church.
So I know we don't
down
have
in San Diego.
Any hard stop by Pete, but you know, I want to get one more thing in, but I want to make sure we get Chief Richardson. I know we've kind of gone around and you haven't had a piece here in a second, so I'm sure you have some thoughts. So
just real quick, and a lot of this has kind of been hit on, but a big one is simultaneous versus sequential. What can you do at the same time and accomplish versus what are you going to have to do sequential? And that's obviously heavily resource driven. We can have, you know, I know departments that are going to show up with two people, departments are going to show up with six. So that's a key to figure out is, you know, based on, once again, rescue, exposure, confine, can we do those all at the same time or do we have to take care of one and then move to the other? Big one I would have to hit on is the fire prevention. We've had very good luck through our fire marshal and fire prevention to get combustible materials removed from around buildings. So we've convinced people to replace mulch with gravel, or we've even had ordinances locally where decks can't be on the, we can't have grills on the deck of apartment buildings. So I would encourage anyone to push the fire prevention public ed, because once again, if we can stop these things from happening, we're a lot better off. And then the final thing I would throw out is you got to get ahead on these. I watch people and I tell them, if you're opening the ceiling and you've got fire ahead above you, you don't have it. You've got to get ahead of it. And that's a big key on these, especially if we talk commercial, row structures, apartment complexes. We can't be fighting fire where it's at. We've got to be getting ahead of it. And that goes back to that BAG acronym. You know, where's it been, where's it at, and where's it going? And that's the key to succeed in these is being able to identify that and get ahead of them. If we don't, it's a losing battle. So thanks again for the opportunity. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. I am getting flooded. This is from Tony Carroll, Ricky, D.C., Saturday night. Now, if you look at that picture, I know it's horrible to see, and this is as good as the old man gets with technology. But obviously that fires all those windows, boom, baby, right? There you go. Catches that. Just, and thank you, everybody. I mean, my phone's, guys are blowing up my phone with fire, outside in fires, which is fantastic. So thank you, everybody.
The only last thing I wanted to hit on, Bobby, was that when we talk about tempo and we talk about moving with a sense of purpose, is that mine all got kind of changed by a founder. One of the founders of Traditions Training was Pete Lund. Pete Lund was a 30-year veteran in the New York City Fire Department, worked at all the busy rescues, ended up being rescued too. And I have a video that I'll post on our Facebook page later on, but here's a 30-year veteran. The New York City Fire Department was there during the war years, the real war years. And here's, I watched this guy chugging around the corner. He's a little short guy. So his definition of running is definitely not, you know, what Mark Gregory's or anybody's, he had these short little legs, but he's scooting around the corner. And, you know, he's talking about this fire and he goes, oh yeah, it's a fire. And the passion and the movement that he had of a 30-year veteran that goes to fires every day he went to work. And how come we see firefighters not having that same passion, that same movement, that same sense of urgency, you know, oh, it's not my emergency. It's, you know, or I haven't trained that well, or, you know, you're only supposed to, you can't run on a fire ground. You know, that's just not the way to do it. So I think a lot of the things that we talk about, this movement, that sense of urgency is important, because as an incident commander, it's a Donnie or Chief Richardson, Chief Heller says, you know, when we go, hey, we need to get a line on that second floor. We needed the line when we said we needed the line, you know, not 5 minutes from now, not 10 minutes from now. And you fumbling around with a hose line or trying to put your face piece on is not helping this fire, especially if we have an outside fire and then three floors of fire that have gone into a non-sprinkler building. And we have people trapped, you know, that's what we're supposed to be here for. So, you know, your sense of urgency needs to be gauged on the fire, not your geographic area. So, but I couldn't ask for a better group today. I greatly appreciate it. I thought we were going to stumble for a second, but after hearing the pregame from, you know, Chief Richardson, Chief Heller and Chief Halton about, the history of these outside in fires really energized, I think, the conversation. So, we greatly.
That's Chief Heller. That's Chief Heller's fire.
Mansion fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's probably still about 10, 15 minutes out on that one.
Is that multi-million-dollar home, Aaron?
He's shaking his head. Yes.
Multi-million-dollar home taken out by a barbecue grill. Yep. There we go. There's another one. Right. Our phones are blowing up, right? This is crazy, right? I love it.
You're going to have to get on Bill Carey to just post all these on Firefighter Nation or something, you know, just to.
Well, my thanks to all of you for doing this. I love traditions. I love the Instructor Society. You guys are wonderful. Two great groups, you know, if you, and also Engine Company, no, that's the Hovelman. What's your group, Aaron?
Well, our guys are on scene training.
On scene.
Although Engine House is very good. Jay does a great job.
Engine House is great. Traditions is great. On scene is great. Everybody's got a company. Every company, you know, they all got their monikers. I love them all. Seriously, there's so many great trainers out there, and many, many, many of them will be at FDIC. So please, you know, make sure you get with these guys, because you know they'll come to your town. And to Chief Riley's point, you know, you can pick up something from everybody. Everybody has got something to teach you. Everybody in the world has something they can share that you can learn. There's 535 people in DC who have nothing to share with anybody. That's worth learning. So I'll take that back. Other than those folks, you can learn from everybody. That was pretty good, huh? Write that one down. That's a good one. Keep it. So I'm just kidding. But thank you guys for doing this. This is a great session. And I agree. Outside in fires, they're complex. They're nuanced. You know, Chief Heller made a great point. You know, the residential versus commercial aspects of them. You know, the lethality of them is just stunning. And I think that, you know, clearly, you know, we need to talk more about it. It would make a great topic, Chief Richardson, for FDIC. I agree. So I surely hope to see you submit it. So it'd also make a great article, Chief Richardson. No pressure there. So, you know,
Chief Halton, real quick, it's since we had this conversation, I'm going to go back and take a look at it. But, you know, second to unidentified basement fires, this might be the leading topic for line of duty deaths. You know, when we start marching out some of these bigger fires, and more have just popped into my head, that'd be something interesting to look at. So,
yeah, I think that when we start talking about these dynamically complex events, it's so hard. And I'm always, Donnie, I think you're right. They're lethal fires. And so I think we need to approach it that way. But I think one of the things to be careful of is that, you know, we tend to focus on what people commonly call root causes, but they're not all inclusive and they're not exclusive, right? So in other words, the factors contribute in really amazing ways to create bad fires. But you're right, I think it's really worth looking at and seeing in terms of our exposure, if these are those, as we talked about earlier, these here kitty fires, you know, and then boom, you know, you're smacked. So, but yeah, then there's a great article, Donnie. No pressure, Chief Fletcher. Come on now. That's two I racked up. That's two.
We'll have to get all those numbers from Bill Carey, of course.
All right. And there's Chief Riley coming in with the statistical analysis, and Chief Heller for the commercial outside in.
Hey, but so let's be sure to remind everybody that we got a little start. We had a technical problem at the beginning with Facebook. So, you know, look, I'm sure Pete will be sure to post the whole thing. So we had like probably 10 minutes before we had a discussion going before we got on Facebook. So be sure to check back on Fire Engineering's page for that. We greatly appreciate it. I'm sure all also posted to social media.
So. And just to wrap it up, today is Cinco de Mayo. So happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody. And I hope you have a great holiday. And I'd also like you to keep our military folks, Hans Henry, who was a friend of my son's, a friend of my family, lost his life on this day about 7 years ago, young soldier, beautiful kid. So as you celebrate, remember almost every day we celebrate, every holiday is associated with some kind of tragedy in some odd way. So if you're going to go out and celebrate Cinco de Mayo, please get a designated driver or call for a cab. Enjoy yourselves. Have a wonderful time. And thank you, everybody, for participating. And Chief Riley, Chief Heller, thank you so much for coordinating all of this. We always appreciate you.